Welcome back to Amanla, an African perspective on CHRY 105.5 in Toronto. Recently, in a Canadian business magazine, there was an interesting article called The Slaves of Eritrea, in which Canadian mining company Nevson has been accused of using forced labor to build a mine in Eritrea. How could something like that happen in the modern business world? The news wasn't so much the allegation, now a couple of years old, that contractors at Nevson Resources Bishagold copper mine in Eritrea had used forced labor under inhuman conditions. It was that the Canadian government's response to those allegations, exposed through an access to information request, was to worry about the company's public reputation, not any actual abuse of workers. Every year, the Eritrean government rounds up around 20,000 11th grade students to finish senior high school in Sawa military camp, after which most of them are conscripted. The majority of the youth are sent to work for the ruling party's companies, which supply slave labor to Nevson. For the past 3 years, in anticipation for the need to transport copper across Eritrea, the Eritrean military has been using forced labor to make substantial road improvement and maintenance necessary to handle the massive truck traffic moving over Eritrea's often narrow and winding escarpment roads. The slave labor is extracted from conscripted Eritrean youth in programs overseen by the Ministry of Defense. The appointment of Sebat Ephraim, Eritrea's former defense minister, who recently became the Minister of Mining, underscores Eritrea's crucial reliance on mining revenues. With payment of close to $500 million in the last 3 years to Eritrea, Nevson, this Canadian-based company, has become a financial saver to the ruling party, whose grip to power relies primarily on mining revenues from Nevson and diaspora remittances. Nevson has always denied the presence of military units in Bisha mines. However, according to WikiLeaks cable from Asmara, and I recorded the WikiLeaks, it says Eritrea's government gave Nevson a security team of 2,000 persons permanently stationed in the Bisha area. To talk about all this situation, I'm joined on the phone with my special guest, Bineka Marcos from Vancouver, who is a graduate from the University of Zimbabwe with honors degrees in civil engineering in 2002. Most importantly, he is an active member of the Eritrean Canadian Human Rights Group advocating for human rights in Eritrea. Can you hear me, Bineka?
Yes, morning.
Thank you for being with us today, and thank you for being patient with us. As I mentioned a little bit on my background of my information, help us a little bit understand, because a lot of people are not very familiar with Africa. So help us a little bit locate this country called Eritrea in terms of geography, history, and recent history in the context of Africa.
First and foremost, I would like to thank you, Amoth, and thank you for your listeners. May I say to your listeners, happy Sunday. I can give you a little intro into Eritrea's geography and history, perhaps, in just a snapshot. Eritrea is located on the Horn of Africa. It's a country with about 6 million people. Its neighboring countries are Ethiopia on the south, you've got Sudan on the west, and you've got the Red Sea on the east and Djibouti on the southeast. And, it's a beautiful country. Eritrea is really full in culture and diversity, and it's certainly gifted with so many natural resources. And in terms of history, it was under Italian colony for almost half a century, and that is from 1889 up to 1942. And then for about a decade, it was under what we call British Protectorate, and back in 1952 it was federated with Ethiopia, and soon after it was forcefully annexed with Ethiopia, and it became the 14th province of Ethiopia. And soon after, an armed struggle started, and it was only in 1991 that it became a full independent country. Mm-hmm. So just that's a slight history. Basically, all Eritreans, all across age, you know, both inside and outside the country, really dedicated themselves for the liberation of the country. So they really have paid a huge price, and they were very delighted, and there was some sort of euphoric feeling when it became independent. Unfortunately, the post-independence Eritrea, you know, never materialized the dreams and aspirations of many Eritreans. And so technically, people really enjoyed relative freedom from 1991 up to 1998 when war with Ethiopia broke out. So it was just that short span of that time that people started to enjoy that freedom. Now, when, you know, the war with Ethiopia broke, everything started to go sour, and it's only then that the true character and nature of the ruling regime start to emerge, and that is, the regime is really brutal in so many aspects of it. You know, its human record is so poor. You know, it's the poorest of the poor, really, in every sense, in every measure. So that hopefully gives your audience, you know, in terms of the location and in terms of the sort of leadership that is in place, you know, it's a country where there is no constitution, really. It's really sad. I wish I could say a whole lot more, and I wish I could also say something good about my country, but the reality is really grimmer at this point in time.
Right. And as you mentioned, there was a lot of hope from a lot of people during the struggle for independence, but the situation have changed very quickly just after that. And then you have the regime's involvement in the region with supporting groups like Al-Shabaab in Somalia. Basically, a situation that have created a massive movement of people trying to emigrate, to leave the country, and then going through Egypt and trying to go to the Middle East. Very, very dramatic situation for those migrant workers. Any comment you would like to make around the social situation that's pushing people to leave the country?
Yeah, obviously, you know, especially 2001, September, you know, right after September 11, you know, the government started to shut down all, you know, news, you know, outlets. So right now, all you have is the only mouthpiece of the government, right? So what that shows you is that also, you know, a lot of, you know, those active, freedom fighters who gave, you know, their blood and sweat for the country were put in jail. Until today, they were never brought to court, no one of them. And right now, the country is more or less like an open prison, you know, prison. So in terms of the Al-Shabaab and all that stuff, I think there is one premise under which the government seems to operate, and that is the enemy of my enemy is my friend. This notion that the Eritrean government is, America is Eritrea's government's number one enemy, that would mean for them anyone who goes against the will and the desires and, you know, interests of America is their friend. Therefore, Al-Shabaab becomes their first candidate. You know, that's why they were hosting them, and they were, I think the UN security report covers this area in detail. So yes, there was, and there was a support that they were getting from the government, and I think this is an open secret.
Right. And at least,
and in terms of the migration, I think for me, the sad reality is not just losing the present youth that is leaving the country in droves, but my fear is that if these able bodies are leaving the country, and then it becomes a concern, what would be the future of that nation?
Right.
So it's not only the present generation that is in jeopardy, but it's also the generation yet to be born, yet to come, that is going to be affected. And that's the most, you know, concerning thing for me, and I'm sure for many Eritreans that care dearly about this issue.
Right. Moving very quickly around the mining question that is the main focus of today, the government seems to be relying a lot on mining revenues to kind of sustain its regime. What's the current state of the mining industry in the country? Before to get to the specific case of the Canadian company, we would like to talk about a little bit more.
Sure. I think, you know, right now there are three main sources of income for the government. Mm-hmm. Really, if you break it down, there are only three. The first one is the 2% income tax that is imposed on Eritreans that live in the diaspora, right? And I'm so glad that, you know, my country, Canada, has, you know, brought this into stop. And I believe, you know, other nations such as Germany is also, you know, advancing on this one. Mm-hmm. So that is one. You know, anyone who wants to get a consular service must get that 2%, you know, income tax to the government. The second one is the remittance. You know, there are a lot of Eritreans who are living in the diaspora that, you know, seem to send, you know, monies to their families, you know, back home.
Mm-hmm.
And the third one, obviously, and the main one is the Bisha mining, because the government is the shareholder of, I think, 40% of the, you know, the share belongs to that government.
Right, right. And the Bisha mining is controlled by this Canadian corporation called NEFSON, which is, believe, to be hosted here in the Toronto Stock Exchange, and then a Canadian company, and who is working very closely with the government. So, as I mentioned in my introduction, there have been allegations of the use of slave labor by this company. And can you explain a little bit on the role of this this company and its complicity of the Eritrean government in making that situation happen?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think first of all, you know, like I said, you know, Bisha Mining Share, it's a mining share company, right? And NEFSON owns 60% of the share, and 40% of the share is owned by the Eritrean National Mining Corporation. It's called INAMCO.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, you know, the government does not care about its people, really, by every measure. If you really put all those, you know, measurements in place, the government gets, you know, if there is anything called F+, they get F+, right? So that is to say, okay, let me give you a snapshot, you know, a snapshot in terms of the history of this mining thing.
Yeah, right.
Back in 2006, the study, you know, NEFSON started to, you know, study, you know, putting that study in place.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, there was a committee composing 9 members that was put in place, and these were experts from different background. For example, from the Ministry of Labor and Human Welfare, from Ministry of Environment, Water and Land Resources. The intent was that this will be the quasi-EPA, if you like, or the Environmental Review Committee that would go through the application process and provide their comments before construction or mining can start, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this body that was put in place by the government as a quasi-approving a committee, when they were putting all their, you know, recommendations together, NEFSON fell to implement. I think, you know, in all fairness also, I think, you know, from my sources, they mentioned that, you know, at the outset, you know, NEFSON had a good intention of trying to play by the book, if you like. But,
mm-hmm.
but as we go down into the interview, I'll shed more light.
Mm-hmm.
But later on, everything was thrown out. And the reality is that because the government had 40% interest, and they really want to maximize their profit in every sense. So there came this so-called... Okay, back in 2008, for example, construction of mining infrastructure started, right?
Yeah.
So what NEFSON did is NEFSON hired Segan, which is a construction company, which is owned by the ruling regime. It's called, you know, the PFDJ, whatever. So Segan, all its employees, actually for the majority of its employees, are what we call national conscripts. Actually, they will ask them to change their clothes when they get to that work site. So basically, these are people that were being paid 450 NAKFA, you know, per month. And when you translate that, it's about, I think one NAKFA is about, one US is about 40 or 50 NAKFA right now.
Mm-hmm.
So we are talking about $5 maybe?
That's it?
US dollars per month. So this is where, you know, NEFSON had muddied itself. And this is how NEFSON had been benefited, because all the employees who were working under, you know, second construction have been national conscripts, which are paid nothing.
Right.
And they had a contractual agreement with the government where the government, being the 40% shareholder, forces NEFSON to employ second. And right now, also in the country, there is no private contractor that is able and that is also allowed to work. So I think if this is an open secret, really. It's not a very complicated nature. This is a clean cut. So what Nielsen did is basically, knowing fully, even though they tried to ignore it, knowing fully, they went ahead because all they care is about making profit.
Right.
So, go ahead. So I think the reality is this. Yes, they say that they have tried to contact the government and air their view in saying that, hey, they should be freely able to hire any contractor, whatever. When the government tried to stonewall them, they just said, okay, who cares? Let's go and make money. You know, and a person or a corporation that boasts about high moral standard should have said, oh, you know what? Sorry, unless you do these things, unless you put these human rights in place, we are not going to do business with you. Sorry. You walk away.
Right.
That's what a normal person would do. Because if your integrity is being compromised, do you go ahead and still make money or you maintain that integrity of yours and walk away? But in this case, you know, they compromise their moral obligation. And the other reality is if you look at their, you know, what they call corporate social responsibility, it's a white lie. You know, if they have diluted the facts, you know, they try to portray as though they are Mother Teresa of our days, you know, corporate Mother Teresa, because they tell you by virtue of being in Eritrea, because of the production, they have helped, you know, improve the social well-being of Eritreans. The reality is that a lot of, you know, Eritreans, you know, especially youth, are flooding, you know, leaving and fleeing the nation in droves.
Right.
In droves. The country is actually, you know, getting emptied day in and day out. And now they tell you, you know, we are improving, you know, the status, the well-being of the people. Where is that? The meaning of the paddle is in the camp, right?
Right. And it's very important that you point out all these facts, because these Canadian corporations are a corporation in which people sometimes invest their retirement pension plan, or people, I'm sure some people who are listening have their parents, you know, investing in this corporation. So it's important that they understand really where they're putting their money into this corporation, that do not stand by the books in terms of ethical behavior, in terms of social responsibilities. But moving forward, how would you think that these issues can be tackled, because this is not an isolated case. You have similar situation in across Africa. In the mining sector is booming, and then all these corporations are flooding this country, and then by the end of the day, the people do not profit into this kind of activities happening. So how do you see the this situation being corrected, and what role the Eritrean or African diaspora living in Canada can play in addressing these situations?
That's a beautiful question. You know what? Sometimes when you read history, you feel like, oh, Africa was being exploited way back when. But the reality is the continent is still being exploited.
Right.
And all this in the name of, you know, investment. You know, investment is a good thing. Mm-hmm. But it has to go through a proper process. Mm-hmm. So now, a lot of Canadians are very good people, extremely good people.
Mm-hmm.
And the sad reality is a lot of them are also being duped, especially people who have got a vested interest in Nielsen. Because when someone, you know, an investor, you know, who decides to go through the glossy, you know, corporate social responsibility, they would tend to believe that, oh, this company is doing great, so why not invest in this one, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there is this facade that deceives people. People of goodwill, people of good intention.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the first thing is, A, the corporate social responsibility has to be verified by independent body. If you get your hand on any of the copies, there is a disclaimer where they say, this report is prepared by management and it has not been independently verified. So now, how can a corporate say something that goes against its own interest, right?
Right.
So there is that deception. So people who are able to read, you know, should be able to ask those critical questions and really find facts, and be able to, before they make any investment, they should really ask themselves, is this worth, you know, investing? Does that, you know, is this investment, you know, in line with my moral standard? You know, so that is a moral judgment for someone has to make. The second thing is, let me give you some critical facts here.
Mm-hmm.
I say to you that, you know, construction of, you know, mining infrastructure started in 2008, right?
Yeah.
And operations started in 2011. So it's really funny because this is the huge, huge, huge moral corruption of NEPSEN, and that is they failed big time to conduct what we call a benchmark. They never taken any inventory of the livestock in that area, blood sample of the people who live there, you know, across all ages, the air quality, because that what helps you is if something, for example, starts to emerge down the road 10 years after the mining is done, mm-hmm. you always go back to that benchmark and see, okay, what was the level of the heavy metals in the blood level of these people?
Right.
You know, what sort of soils did we have, and what does it look like now? What do the water bodies used to look like then, and what about now? Right. But NEPSEN failed to do that. Mm-hmm. It's only in 2012, after, you know, well, when they start, you know, production, that they start to install this pollution control monitoring stations.
Mm-hmm.
So that is one. And the second thing is they never, ever, ever received, you know, any blessing from that community that I told you, because the community, you know, was dissolved along the way because the regime felt that, you know, the community's recommendations were too expensive for them to implement. All they cared was how to cut expenses and make profit, you know, regardless of the well-being of the people.
Right.
So for us, people in the diaspora and people, you know, back home, they should be able to ask, give us, you know, what sort of, you know, review process have you taken?
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any, you know, independently, you know, prepare report? Because anyone will try to, you know, to present themselves as though they are the best people, you know, the best corporations for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
So really to make sure that we ask the tough and hard questions. It's not just about this generation, but we are talking about generations yet to come. And quite frankly, you know, NEPSEN had failed in every aspect because they have not paid the due diligence into the historical sites that are out there. And also they desecrated so many graveyards in that area. You know, actually I had the opportunity to talk to some people who were involved with that committee.
Mm-hmm.
And only if my fellow air trans learn about this reality, they would have gone like, wow, we could not believe that this could happen in this day and age.
Right.
But the reality is that a lot of us have not been able to have access to that information. So we are deceived. So when we are deceived, you know, emotion, you know, sets in. It's this, to be honest with you, this is not about the government of Eritrea or anything. This is about human.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is about human beings. You know, we are all citizens of this world. We only have one planet.
Right.
And if corporations and governments are not doing their due diligence to really go through all these processes and be able to make sure that they take the high road, not just the quick, you know, easy way to make money, but rather to really invest their time and energy to say, okay, how can we do this responsibly?
Right.
And so these are the things that there has been a lot of flaw. And quite frankly, again, you know, in Eritrea, it's not the time to invest because there is no human rights at all. I mean, people are, you know, day after day, they are living in repression and suppression. You know, the country has turned into an open prison.
Right.
So this is not the time to really invest. This is not the time to invest. And a lot of my fellow Eritreans, you know, of goodwill, they may be deceived, you know, in the name of development, in the name of investment. But the reality is that NEPSEN never got its, you know, what we call now a social license. The people who live in that area were never compensated. You know, they were never heard, you know, they were never consulted properly.
Right.
So this is not just about Eritrea now. I'm sure there are a lot of cases in Africa. For example, you could talk about Barrick gold mining in Tanzania as well. Okay. I was reading, you know, some time ago, you know, this seems to affect all of us.
All of us,
you know, we should not just worry until it becomes part of our country or our back home. We should treat this as a global issue, as an African issue, you know.
Absolutely.
And be able to share that information. You know, I'm so glad that you took your time to investigate and to have me on your show, because these are issues that we all need to learn, because they seem to repeat themselves everywhere, all across the globe. And you know what? Those who do not have a say, they tend to pay the price. Those who are on the top echelon, they keep, you know, enriching their pockets. But at the end of the day, it's the peasant that get, you know, impacted deeply. And a lot of them, they are not even aware of what their rights are.
Absolutely. It's unfortunately, we seem to be running out of time. That was wonderful, and we would like to thank you very much for your all the information you provide. I'm sure that it's an eye-opener for a lot of our listeners, and we would like to continue the discussion in the months and to come. But for now, I would like to thank you very much for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. For your York University students, I just want to encourage them to research and to do their dissertation on this topic, because there is a lot to learn, a lot to discover, a lot to share with other countries that may find themselves in a similar situation. Once again, thank you so much for having me, and have a great day.
Thanks. Have a good day, too. Thank you.
Cheers. You too. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.